Welcome, listeners, to the Traversing the Stars podcast. Today on the show, we have a very special guest, Mr. William Sadler. You know him from such fantastic movies as Tales from the Crypt, Demon Knight, The Shawshank Redemption, Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey, Bill and Ted's Face the Music, and upcoming The Unholy, and soon A Stage of Twilight. Now come join me as we go traversing the stars. Mr. Sadler, for coming to our show. I'm a big fan of yours, and it's a huge, huge honor to be able to talk to you again. It really is a big deal.
Well, it's my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
No problem. And my partner, JD, also is a huge fan of yours. Unfortunately, is working right now and couldn't talk with you. And he wanted me to give you a message. I'll make sure I give it to him before. So at least He feels like he got a chance to talk with you a little bit. This is a quote. He wanted to point out that he's a massive fan of the Bill and Ted series and wanted to congratulate you and thank you for Bill and Ted Face the Music. It was a gift to the fans, and it was great seeing Death Riot again.
Whoa. Thank you. I'm blown away. I appreciate that.
I mean, I imagine you get that reaction a lot from your fans, because like the Bill and Ted movies were so wonderful. And I think Face the Music, which I did get a chance to talk with you the last time we spoke, just came out at that perfect time during COVID where you needed that release, and seeing these old friends like Death and Bill and Ted again just felt so good, so cathartic.
I'm glad that was the reaction that a lot of people had, and especially the folks that knew the first two movies.
Yes.
Because it had been 30 years between the second and the third film. And that's a long time. That's long enough to have children. You know, a whole generation came and went, but it was really gratifying. It was really fun to do. I mean, those kind of movies that the Bill and Ted movies have just been, you know, I love playing the character of the Grim Reaper. Yeah. You know, they're well written, and they're smart, and they're funny. And I agree. I thought in the middle of the pandemic, I wasn't sure how people were going to be able to see it, because you can't, you know, everyone was still locked down and so on. But it was, you know, I guess the timing was kind of perfect. It would have made more money if the theaters had all been open and running.
Yeah.
But boy, did we need some, you know, some feel good.
Yeah. And I think the great thing about Face the Music is it could only have been filmed when it was filmed. I mean, you needed that gap in time to really give it the resonance that the script and the storyline deserved with these characters. It wouldn't have worked as well if it came out like 5 years after the second one or 6 years after the second one. You needed that growth, I think, with all the actors to really make it, you know, say what it wanted to say.
Well, they couldn't. Yeah, you couldn't have that embarrassing story of that, you know, they've been trying for 30 years to write the song to save the universe, and it wasn't there. And they're blowing didgeridoos and voice singing and whatever else. I thought it was a really smart and funny movie, and it was lovely to see the two of them together again.
Yeah.
You know, I guess everybody feels like they grew up with these two guys, and Death.
I think there's a lot of people who watch a movie like that and kind of feel like Bill and Ted, that we never got to play the song we wanted to play. You know what I'm saying? We never had that life that we thought we were going to get. Because, you know what I'm saying? Right. There's so many, like, I think some of us have those dreams, and we look back at 40. Now, I'm actually now 41. I look at 41, you're looking back going, no, what happened, you know? And yep. I think that movie,
you don't look a day over 40.
I really appreciate that. I try to keep, at least I got my color still in my hair, which is kind of nice at 40. But yeah, so I agree with JD. I think all the fans owe you guys for giving that to us when we needed it the most.
Wow, appreciate it. Thank you.
No, it's our honor. And so it kind of brings me to what actually was going to be my first question for you, which was, So you've been acting and successfully acting for a lot of years. I mean, Tales of the Crypt, Demon Knight was like in the 90s. And you've actually mastered your craft. You're fantastic. So once you reach that point where you reach that level of skill and talent in your profession, what keeps you to still do it? I mean, where does the spark come from now that you've, like I said, mastered the art?
Well, in a strange way, when as you get better at the technical skills involved, and some of that is just practice, and some of it is reach a certain age and you stop pretending to be young or holding on to things that were holding you back, that kind of thing. But it becomes more fun. Everything, you know, the acting process itself of getting lost in some other character, it's become more fun for me now than it used to be. I used to fret about things quite a bit, and, you know, worry this isn't good enough and that's not good enough and I don't know what I'm doing and they're going to figure out that I don't know what I'm doing and then they're going to want the money back and I don't worry about any of that shit anymore. So I just, you know, when I get a chance to do it now, I guess I appreciate it more. It's, you know, I can bring more to it. I'm maybe not making myself very clear, but it's more fun. It's more fun than it used to be. It's more rewarding than it ever was before, which is surprising.
Back in the past, when you were younger, did you ever have that imposter syndrome that people talk about, where you wondered about, you know, did you deserve to have the success that you've had? Or
all the time. Well, not all the time. Every once in a while, of course, you sit there, you think, oh my God, they have to see that I don't know what I'm doing. Why do they keep hiring me? I clearly don't know shit about this. Why don't they? They're going to want all the money back. You know, it's nonsense. I guess the imposter syndrome happens to everybody at some time. And it's hard to believe, even if you say I've mastered my craft. It happens so incrementally that you don't. If I have what I've mastered has happened so slowly over so many years that it almost doesn't seem like, you know, there was no one moment when I went, now I can do it. Yeah. You know, it sort of came in bits and pieces and fits and starts. And there's a movie that I did with Karen Allen called A Stage of Twilight that I'm very proud of. I think we were going to talk about that anyway.
Yeah, of course.
But it was one of those opportunities. It was a role that I never get to play. You know, he doesn't murder anybody. He's not a terrorist. He doesn't get killed by demons or vampires. He, you know, it's not sci-fi. It's just this couple wrestling with kind of end of life problems, but real problems between two real people. And she's phenomenal to work with. She's so good to work with. And the writing was terrific. And it was just this wonderful meaty role that I sank into. I just like took it on. I came away feeling like, I had done some of the best work that I've ever done in my life on this little tiny movie that cost $1.98 to make. You know, it was this little indie. But there's so much quality. There's so much passion and love. And I hope it gets noticed. I hope it gets out there and people get a chance to see it. I think it's going to be extraordinary. I never know. I am personally terrified to see it because that's just how I am. I'm sure I'll sit there going, oh my God, why did I do that? And they're going to figure out that I don't know how to do this. And even though they didn't pay me very much, they're going to want that money back.
You're just sitting there going, I got to kill somebody in this movie. Something needs
to happen. I have to kill someone in this movie. There must be a vampire around here somewhere. I can. No, it's always watching yourself on films. Dennis Hopper used to insist that his actors watch the dailies because he felt this is your craft. Mm-hmm. You should see what you're, it's like you're cooking. You should taste what you've cooked.
Yeah.
And I understand that, but it doesn't make it any more comfortable. It's a little like watching. It's like listening to yourself on a tape recording.
Yes.
And we've all experienced this. You hear this voice and you say, holy crap. I don't sound like that. That's not how I sound. Do I,
Yeah.
Well, yes, you do.
Yeah. I was going to say, because what it reminded me of, because obviously I do this podcast and I'm going to have to go through it for editing and listen to the whole thing again on the recording. And I'm going to have to hear my own voice. And honest to God, I've done it before and I do it again. And I hate doing it. It's like I cringe when I hear myself. I was like, oh, son of a bitch.
But everybody else hears your voice and they think, yeah, okay.
Yeah.
That's his voice. Yeah, he sounds just like him.
Yeah.
You know?
And, and the other thing I found interesting that you said that this role is so different for you because it's a smaller movie. I do find that, it's the smaller movie that allows, I think, actors to do the roles they wouldn't otherwise be able to do.
I think that you're right. I think that's the case, that big studio movies. First of all, big studio movies don't do movies like this.
Mm.
Big studios don't do movies like this. This is a little examination, a little human story. It's, this isn't Marvel comics or Knights in Shining Armor or Star Trek or something. This is a little human story.
Mm.
And you do get a chance in these indie movies. You do sometimes get a chance to do things that you wouldn't, the big studios are never going to hire you to do, or they haven't yet. I suppose that could change.
Well, they got to play it so safe because of the budgets they're dealing with, so everything has to be safe. The actors that are safe for that role that you expect,
Yeah. Yeah. You're going to spend, hundreds of millions of dollars on a film. You need, they want some guarantee. They want some bankable box office names that they can shout out, and James Bond movies. Yeah. And I love the big movies. I've done, I've done a number of big honking movies, and they're great fun. But there's a world below in the economy. There's a world below that, those hundreds of millions of dollars where people, people have an idea and a little bit of money, and these days it's because of digital photography. It's not as, it's not as difficult as it used to be. And these little movies are sometimes opportunities to showcase talents and stories and directing skills and so on. It's exciting in some ways. The most fun stuff is happening in the,
Yeah, and I think as you mentioned, the stage of Twilight. I had the, I went over and I got to read some of the summary of the movie, and you play a character called Barry, and Barry is sending into the woods to die what he considers a dignified death alone from his wife. It said partner, but I assume it's the wife.
His Laura. Wife.
And so, and I thought it was such a fascinating concept, especially I think the idea, the question that really hit me as I was reading the summary is that Barry is equating dying alone with being dignified. And I was wondering, how does that idea affect him, and how does he feel about that idea?
I think, well, in his case, it's always hard for someone who's been, self-supporting, has control of themselves and their career and their, or feels like they have control, to start to lose control of it. And he, little by little, his body is giving way. And he very soon is going to be completely helpless. And he doesn't want her to see him that way. He loves this woman, and he has for 40 some years. And it's killing him to think that she's going to see him this way. He still has some pride. And his solution is this idiotic solution. He's going to, he's going to go off and finish by himself. He's going to take that away from her. And she, of course, is like, the hell you are. This is for better or for worse, sickness or health, till death do us part. And so, and they really butt heads. The movie is more about the two of them wrestling with this, and the solutions that they come up with, that are, how their love for each other finds a way to solve it, and it's beautiful. I think,
It sounds like a beautiful idea. And I think it also, once again, there's a lot of interesting philosophical questions it brings up as well, which is, in death, whose
life is it anyway?
Yeah. I mean, his choice, or the wife who has been married and in this, as you said, death to you part, it's her, part of his life is hers as well. And it's interesting philosophy that brings up. And I love that.
Yeah. You don't get to tell me how I do this.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's like, and it's, it sounds like a downer, but it's not. There's so much love there. But it's fun to watch them wrestle with just what that means. So,
and you said Cora is played by Karen Allen, who everyone knows from Raiders of the Lost Ark, very, very well known actress. What was the experience like working with Ms. Allen?
She was awful. She was, oh my God. she was brilliant. I was very nervous the table reads that we did, but before we started filming, I was like, I thought, it's Karen Allen. I was just a little bit starstruck, but we very quickly kind of bonded, and there was a lot of laughing between the two of us. We giggled all the way through the filming. It was pretty easy pretending to be in love with her.
What was it necessary to have those moments off the set? Because it sounds like it was so many heavy moments in the movie. Is it necessary to have those later moments and have someone you can laugh with off the set to make it emotionally capable?
You really need a partner to do that, to go to these places as an actor. You need if you're not both on the same page, you close off. You just, I can't go there by myself. I'm not gonna show you that if I don't trust that, you're in the same boat with me. And so there's a sort of an agreement. There's like a contract between actors that happens, because you have to get more personal than people generally do, than someone you meet in a grocery store. You have to get past the social boundaries, the niceties, and the social distance. These two have been married for 45 years. There's nothing they haven't seen about each other, And they care deeply about each other. But in order to go to these places as actors and actresses, you have to trust that your partner is there, is just as committed and just as caring and just, let's do it. just roll, let's roll up our sleeves and shut everybody else out, you know?
And I think I like the fact that you're talking about basically becoming vulnerable with basically, and prior was a stranger for you in many cases. Does the laughter allow you to be that vulnerable, or was there something else that allowed the vulnerability to happen?
The laughter is part of it. The laughter is always part of it. I think it's, you have, because if you can laugh at each other, if you can laugh at yourselves, you've begun to open up to each other. Mm. That's a shared emotion. You know, it's because you're embarrassed, or you know, whatever it is that made you laugh. It's usually some, you know, awful physical whatever. but it's a shared thing. Mm. You know, laughter is one of those things, and it's part of the process of I think it is. I love to laugh with them. And you do, you know, I've done films with people who are supposed to be my brother or my wife or someone who I've known all my life. And you meet them the morning that you're supposed to shoot the big scene with them, you know? Yeah. and you have nothing, you know nothing about each other except her name. Mm. Or, you know, and you somehow have to very quickly get permission to be as angry as your character is supposed to get, or as hurt, or as, you know, whatever. You need to find the contract between you. Mm. So that and it's just part of the acting process.
Well, you use a phrase, the contract between you. What do you mean by contract?
I did a short film with an actress named Julie Tuck.
Okay.
Called A Different Life, and it's on YouTube. I think you can rent it. But we shot for 2 days. I'd never met her before, and she's trying to get away, and she's wearing this little night shirt thing. And I'm wrestling with her up and down this hallway where we're physically, I mean, really wrestling. She's, you know, she's got her feet in the doorway. She's really fighting me, and I'm really holding on to her. And we had to, because there was so much physical contact, you know, that broke all social boundaries. You know, this isn't something you do with anybody you don't know. Mm. There had to be a contract between us. It was like, I'm going to have to grab you. Are you okay with this? Are you okay with that? Mm. And it's sort of like, you know, and she said, go for it. Because nice. I want to fight like hell. So you do what you got to do. And she did. And she went, you know, she went apeshit crazy fighting to get away. And I had to fight like hell to hang on to her. And the result was, you know, this terrific little piece of film. You know, it's very believable. And, you know, the actors accomplished what was required for the scene in a way that was shockingly, you know, it was good. But without that contract, I wouldn't have, you know, it's like you're, you have to be polite, or you have to hold yourself back. You have to, you know, part of the acting process is getting past that stuff, is finding a place where the two of you, or the three of you, how many in the scene, where you can, you know, I'm going to go for this. You good with that? And once the agreement is agreed upon, then, you know, Then it's just balls to the wall. It's just like, and I, you know, then it's let's go, and nobody gets hurt. No one gets, you know, no one feels like they've been, you know, lied to or violated, or you know what I mean? Because you do, because you're often asked to do things that are pretty personal, that are pretty, you know, private.
Yeah.
In a kind of a public setting.
So Stage of Twilight, when can our listeners find it?
I think it's going to be ready. I believe, I'm not exactly certain, but they said sometime in the end of December, they're going to start putting it out to film festivals.
Oh, okay.
So it'll start to be seen, and then hopefully it'll find a life beyond that.
I hope so. And you're also in another movie that I saw that it was fantastic, called The Unholy.
Cool.
Which was a movie. It was definitely different than a lot of the movies I'm used to seeing. It felt very different, even though it was a horror movie. There was something very interesting about it. And you got to play a character called Father Hagen.
Right.
I think the part that I felt was so different about it was because of how it handled the concept of belief and religion within that horror setting. And you have a hero who isn't sort of a hero either. And like I said, it was just far more complexity that you normally see in what you would think is a standard horror movie, you know, or ghost story.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I agree. It's fun. I've played a lot of priests lately too, yes, which is interesting. For some reason, a lot of...
Yeah, you know what? The other thing I thought was funny as well is that Father Hagen has emphysema and is dying. Barry is coughing.
And smoking like a chip.
Right. And then you had the character of Barry from A Stage of Twilight who has a coughing fit and is dying from another. I was like,
yeah.
You had like a thing back to back. Well,
knock on wood, no. I don't think so.
Well, hopefully not.
Part of what's cool about The Unholy is that it really appears that his niece has seen a miracle has happened in this little town. She's been cured. She was deaf and mute for the entire 21 years or whatever that she's been living with me, and all of a sudden she can speak. And it's just and it very quickly spreads. The word, you know, the word goes out that she's seen Mary. I don't want to spoil it for people.
I was gonna say something, but it doesn't.
I mean, it's sort of like what happened at Fatima, the children that saw the Virgin Mary. But it all goes wrong.
Of course.
But it's great fun to play with those ideas. I love when religion gets dragged. There's something about dragging the Catholic Church or Episcopal Church into a horror movie. The best it was ever done, I think, was The Exorcist, where you pit one against the other. Why wouldn't you believe in evil spirits? You believe in those.
Yep.
You know, you already believe in, you know, the Holy Ghost.
Right.
Pal. Where's the big leap from, you know, you believe in miracles. So I don't think it's a great leap to go to.
And I think what I love about the movie too, that it didn't shy away from the consequences of it. I mean, it builds up this idea of, because a lot of it's, you know, obviously about belief and what we believe. And it kind of goes into not only the positive aspects of belief, but as things start falling apart, you see the consequence of that. Yeah, it's nice that people believed in this, but now look what's going to happen when the right thing happens, you know, and then now you see what happens when that's consequences of that happen. And it doesn't shy away from it, makes this happy, easy to digest story at the end. It's the ending does make you go, well, it's happy on some level, but there's a lot of unhappy people, you know?
Yeah, ruh-roh.
And I think that was absolutely genius. And there's two lines that I really like in this movie a lot, and I kind of wanted to get your input on how that impacted your character and how you played your character, okay? It's one line that it said is, when God builds a church, the devil builds a chapel next door, and then he goes, and wherever God goes, the unholy follow. So how did that inform you as the actor playing that character, those ideas?
That was when these miracles start to happen, Hagen has his doubts. Mm. He's alarmed. I mean, it's wonderful that she's cured, that she can speak, but he's frightened for her. Mm. That because it was Martin Luther who said, when God builds a church, the devil builds a chapel next door. Mm. And and Hagen says that. He's like, that's what he's worried about. Mm. That something wicked this way comes. That maybe all of this miraculous, joyful, you know, maybe there's something dark right underneath it that we're not aware of. And he becomes frightened about it. He's worried about her, because she's being carried away by this, you know, literally she's being carried away by this spirit that's taking her over and so on. And like any parent, he would, you know, are you sure? Are you, come on. Yeah, I believe in miracles, but really? Yeah. are you sure this isn't going to end bad?
Yeah, and I one of the great thing I think about your performance, and I really thought your performance really carried that movie and made it, gave it a lot of the gravity that it had. And part of me was wondering, is that pure acting, or is it the entirety of your career that you kind of have that part of you that just sees the layers, that you just, you know, saying that you wear the layers on your experiences?
Gosh, I don't know how to answer that. I don't know, because you do bring... I mean, you carry all the things you've done with you. Mm. And audiences carry all the things you've done with you. Mm. I mean, the people that watched The Unholy saw Shawshank how many times, and, you know, of these other films. You add more to the story than even I do. But yeah, I'm not sure. I guess did I answer your question? Did I add gravity to the story, or weight, or legitimacy, or something?
Yeah, I mean, I think
maybe,
so.
I don't know. Maybe. I think that I sometimes think that's my job.
Yes.
Is that when I lend myself to a film, you get the whole banana. You don't get,
right.
It isn't, you know.
Because you
get everything I've done up to now as well.
Because, I mean, there's, when you're playing Father Hagen, there's an earnestness to the character. But at the same time, there's a little bit of cynicism in, I would imagine, the belief to believe in, like you said, God coming down may not be the best thing for us to happen right now. You know, this is going to be, you know what I'm saying? You would think philosophically, if you were religious, I'm not really religious, but if you were religious, think having the Virgin Mary come down and being like, I'm going to help everybody. It sounds like on the surface, a very good thing. And he's like, no, there's nothing good that will come from this. And I think, you know, that's something that I think it helps that you are playing it, because you could play that earnest, religious, faithful man but you could definitely under the surface see a guy who's definitely going, this isn't going to go well, you know?
That's, and then that's in the credit where credit is due. That was in the script as well, that he, you know, he starts to have doubts, you know, he doesn't, this is, if it seems too good to be true, maybe it is. This is too good to be true. This is moving too fast. This is taking, you know, she's doing stuff now that she hasn't done in the last two decades that I've known her. And, you know, he doesn't understand it. That's the other part of it, is that he can't get his head around what's occurred to her. And that worries him, that, you know, it isn't clear to him what the miracle, you know, why did it choose her? Why did it happen in this cow pasture, but by the church?
There's another good line I want to question you as well. There's a line that Father Hagen says, is faith in evil empowers evil. Is that something you also believe as an individual, or do you think, and what do you think that line meant to you as when you were playing the character?
Faith in evil,
evil empowers evil is another
empowers line. Evil. Yeah. Well, that's modern politics. That's faith in evil empowers evil. That's how you give it power. If you believe in it, you've given it, you know, you've given it life. You've given it strength. It has an audience now. It has followers now. And like people we know in the news, where faith in evil gives power to evil. Yeah. And by the time Hagen figures out, he starts doing his own research. He starts digging, and just about the time he figures out what, I don't want to give anything away.
Yeah. but it is a great
movie. But he doesn't die of emphysema.
And, you know, in watching this movie, I was thinking to myself, I mean, you've been in some great horror movies now. I mean, you've done so many really good ones. What attracts you to them?
They cast me. That's part of it. I mean, it's what's available. It's what comes down the road. I'm an actor, and you know, if they were romantic comedies, I'd be doing romantic comedies. The horror movies are fun. I don't actually like to watch them. I'm not a fan of. I like thrillers. I like, you know. And I think it's a different. I'm not a big fan of like slasher movies, or, you know, how many different ways can we drill holes in this person, or I get scared. I get swept away like anybody else in the movies. And I know how they're made. You know, I know how the sausage got made, but it still gets me scared. And then I don't want to go down in the basement and change the laundry load or whatever, you know. Why would you want to get scared? I've never understood the big.
Well, that's why I don't go on roller coasters. I'm like, I don't understand this. I don't know why you're doing that to yourself.
Yes, I've gone on roller coasters.
Yeah. Did you feel you're afraid when you're on them?
It's different than having some, you know, ghost sneak up behind you while you're cleaning the cat box or something, you know.
That'd be a horrible way to go. Being the cat litter of your cat.
They found him face down in the cat box. It was awful.
Oh man.
I wish I'd never seen it.
That's the unholy two right there.
I've done a number of them. I like Demon Knight. I like a lot. I can watch Demon Knight.
That movie was so fantastic. I used to watch that movie all day long. You Billy and Billy Zane. Zane.
That same time is perfect. Stop. Just stop. I mean, you just, honestly, I've never seen him be, I've never seen him be better than that. He's like, he's so funny, and he steals that movie. But Jada Pinkett, it's a great cast, you know, and Ernest Dickerson, you know, all credit to Ernest Dickerson for, you know, putting it together the way that he did, because we lend as much credibility. That's what you were talking about, lending legitimacy or something to films. I sort of think that's my job. It's like, I try to bring some veritas to this moment, and then this moment, and then this moment, so that the audience has, if they can believe it just a little, even just a little bit, they'll come along for the ride. You know, as soon as they stop believing the character, they sit, you know, it's like, yeah, okay, I'm going to go get some popcorn. It's like, I'm out of, you know, they're looking at their watch, and they're not going with you to the moon. But I sort of feel like that's my job, is to make these people that I play as believable as I can, so that audiences watching it can get a hold of something and say, all right, oh shit, look what's going to happen to him. You know what I mean? They can, there's something they can get latched onto.
You know, and I think that's why I thought how you handled Father Hagen was just perfect. Because when you watch the movie The Unholy, which I thought was, like I said, it's a great movie, but we don't get a backstory of Father Hagen. All you know of Father Hagen is when he appears. But because of how you played him, you just kind of felt you understood where he was coming from. You understood him. And I think that's something that not every actor can bring to a role just by being inhabiting that character.
Well, thank you.
well, I mean, like I said, and it's just great, you know?
I appreciate it. Thank you. I told you, I'm having more fun now than I used to. I think I'm a better actor now than I used to be too. I mean, there's more of me available to me now than there used to be, if that makes sense.
Is it intentional, or is it instinctually you're more able to do these roles?
I think maybe it's just age. You know, you get, I don't hold back, you know, I'm done being embarrassed about who I am or how I look or worried about, you know, this or that. It's more fun to go for it. Just use everything you have and fill these characters up, you know? And it's more fun for the audience, and it's more fun for me. I don't know why that I didn't, I guess I used to do that to some degree, but it's gotten, I don't know, I've gotten better, I think, over the years.
I mean, it must be great. I mean, you can play your roles, I guess, and have no regrets, because you are going full bore into your role. I mean, back in the day, did you find yourself at times holding back and then wondering later, should I have gone further? Should I have pushed it more when you were as a younger person?
You make a lot of mistakes. I've gone full out lots of times. I just think as a human, I'm more forgiving of myself now. I'm less guarded with what I feel, what I, you know, and so maybe that's it. I mean, I'm getting to be an old man. I cry. It's interesting. It's surprising how easily I cry these days, you know, but that's old men. You know, I don't, I, I have trouble taking credit for getting old. I think that's all that happened is I kept doing this long enough that I got old.
Well, you know, there's value in experience, isn't there? You know, I mean, I like to think I'm a smarter person at 40 than I was at 20. Hopefully I can go back. If I ever saw my 20-year-old self, I'd be like, you are an idiot. You know, I would hate to think that I'm the same intelligence that I was when I was 20 years old.
You dope. Yeah. I don't know. I'm still having fun doing it, though. So as long as they keep asking me to do it, I guess. I haven't reached a point yet where I'm, you know, I can't remember lines or anything. All of that stuff's gotten easier, by the way.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
Well, as a fan, I want to thank you for being the Unholy. Like I said, I think you made that movie and it was fantastic.
And watch and keep your eyes out for a stage of Twilight as and well. I'm a good actor. I'm not as good a salesman.
No worries. That's my job when I have you on is to make sure I pitch your product. But so definitely Stage of Twilight. And when that comes out, if you or your publicist, when it does hit the film festivals, please let me know. We'll add it to the interview.
As soon as there is a place to see it. Yeah.
I appreciate that.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Unholy, Amazon Prime has it. I'm not sure if Fios does, but I know Amazon Prime does. Do it. It's worth it.
I think I'm allowed to say this. I'm doing Salem's Lot.
Oh, very cool.
That's right now.
So oh, that, okay.
And I can't say anymore because I would have to kill you.
Well, when you are able, please come back. You are
as soon as I'm able to say more than that, I'll come back and say, I'll spill the beans.
I'll totally do that. I would definitely appreciate it.
I'll ruin the movie for you. You'll know how it ends.
I'll be a fantastic scoop. I'll be like, okay. Ruining. I'm sure the producer would be like, "What the hell, man?" But I'll be like,
"Dude, what were you thinking? Stop! Someone stop him!
Someone just these hands just come over and just pull you off this camera. Get out! Don't talk anymore." But I want to thank you so much, Mr. Sadler. You're a great pleasure. Like I said, I was glad to have you back again and. The door to this podcast is always open to you, so use it as much as possible.
Thank you.
Have a fantastic night.
You too. Bye-bye.